8430. You're listening to WSHA 88.9 FM, and we're speaking with Sheila Jordan, all the way from New York.
Yes.
And you've just come back from Germany.
Yes.
So have you caught your breath yet?
Not really, but, you know, I always have my breath for jazz.
Always there.
Uh-huh.
Always there. Well, I'm so glad. I want to welcome you here to the show, Straight No Chaser, on WSHA. And we've really been looking forward to getting to talk with you about your new CD and about your music in general, because, my gosh, you've been so busy over the years, made so much of it.
Oh, yes. Wow, just since I've been 58 years old, and I just turned 80. But so when I turned 58, then I really started moving because I got fired from my day job.
Sometimes good things happen like that, huh?
Yeah, well, you know, I always sang, though, even when I had my day job. But, you know, it's nice to know that I can just go out there now at 80 and do the music, which is what I really wanted to do all my life anyway. But, you know, good things come to those who wait, so the song goes.
Indeed, indeed. Well, I have all kinds of questions to ask you about some of those earlier days, but we probably should catch up a little bit on how we started this hour before we were actually able to connect with you. We played from your brand new CD called Winter Sunshine, Sheila
mm-hmm.
Jordan, and we heard the track The Crossing.
Oh.
I wonder if you would tell us a little story about that.
Oh, the Crossing I wrote when I, you know, I had a problem with the alcohol and cocaine usage. And I had been sort of on a dry drunk for about 8 years, and then I got into cocaine not thinking it was addictive, and it certainly was. That was a big joke in the end. But, you know, I had a spiritual awakening, and it was this message that came loud and clear. If you don't take care of the gift I've given you, then I'm going to take it away and give it to somebody else. And so at this time, I really decided, oh, I got to do something about this, you know. And I've been in a program, and I wrote The Crossing.
That's wonderful.
Yes, and that's what The Crossing's about. It's, you know, indirectly, it's about my recovery from drugs and alcohol.
There is such a healing angle to music and to jazz, and
mm-hmm.
Clearly you've brought that to that song.
Oh, thank you very much.
Very much. And you share, as you so well announced at the end of the track, you share the stage on this recording with Steve Amiro on the piano, Kieran
uh-huh.
Overs on the bass, and Andre White on the drums.
Yeah, they're a wonderful Montreal trio. I think Karen might live in Toronto now.
Uh-huh. And it was recorded at the club called Upstairs in Montreal?
Yes, the Upstairs. Yes. Great. A lovely, lovely jazz club.
I can't wait to go.
Oh, you must go. It's not a big, big club, and that's what makes it so nice, because it's quite intimate. I think you'd really dig it. And they got some wonderful, wonderful musicians in Canada.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. We've been playing those here at the station over the months.
Mm-hmm.
So some of the other tracks on here are some classic ones. It also includes Bobby Timmons' Dat Dare.
Oh, I do that almost at every concert. I've recorded it quite a few times now, because especially when they're live performances, you know, regular studio gig, I'm sure I wouldn't record it again, but at live performances, I always do that for my daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Even though she's a grown woman now, you know, they're still your kids. You know, they'll always be your kids.
And oh, so important.
Yes, very.
Absolutely. I know that's been one of the main themes for you, was to, as you mentioned, having your day job until
mm-hmm.
you felt that you could afford to take on music full time, because Tracy and your family has always been very important.
Well, I'm, you know, was the sole supporter. It was just she and I in this world. So I felt that I really wanted to take care of her, and that she wouldn't have to want for too much. as I did as a kid, you know. So I wanted to be able to pay my rent and buy food, you know, and give her the best that I could possibly give her. So
I'm not sure that a lot of people don't often understand behind the CDs that they hear on the radio the stories behind of the sacrifices and the choices that people have to make in order to do their art. And clearly you made one for your art because you wanted to keep the music that you were doing pure.
Yes, that's right. I did, Susan. You know, it was like I said, I would support this music until it could support me. And maybe it would never support me, but that doesn't mean that I would give it up. You know, I would never give the music up. I love it. It's been such a beautiful gift for me, whether I hear it or teach it or sing it. You know, I feel very fortunate to have met Charlie Parker all those years ago and been introduced to jazz music when I was 14 years old.
Well, while we're talking about back there, we should visit some of your early history. You had grown up in the coal mining area of Pennsylvania.
Yeah, I was raised by my grandparents because my mother was barely 17 when she had me. And she couldn't take care of me, so my grandparents, who were very poor, and they were, you know, most of the family was miners, and they had a lot of kids, and I was like the little sister, even though I was a grandchild. And my aunts and uncles were, like, not that much older than me. In fact, I had one uncle that was even younger than me. But I grew up with them I didn't entirely grow up with them, but until I was 14, I was there. And then at 14 years old, I moved to Detroit to be with my mother and get an education there, and that's where I got turned on to Charlie Parker.
And things were never the same.
Never been the same since. I went down to that jukebox one day, and I don't remember how old I was, but I was a kid, and I think either first, second year of high school, and put that nickel in there and played Charlie Parker and his reboppers, not beboppers, reboppers. And that's it. I said, that's the music I'll dedicate my life to.
Tell us about getting to listen to him out, since you couldn't go into the clubs.
Oh, yeah. Well, I wrote a blues about this called Sheila's Blues. Actually, it might be on that record.
It is. Sure.
I never listen to my records, so I don't even know what's on them. You know, I mean, they send me, I pick ones that I think are, you know, passable, because I've yet to make the CD that I feel is my best. You know, I'm still trying, but that's on that blues on there. I wrote that, I improvised on it one time, and I said, you know, this is much easier than answering a million questions after a concert or after a gig, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I decided to sing about it at the end of the evening, and that's what that's about. But, yeah, I grew up in the coal mining area, and then I went to Detroit at 14, and then I met Charlie Parker through two young cats that were scat singing at this club. It was a person's club, but, you know, Detroit was so prejudiced at the time.
Mm.
I mean, they made it almost impossible. Oh, wouldn't they have a shock today if they were alive and saw that we now have a biracial president, right?
Yeah,
wouldn't they be shocked? But boy, I tell you, they really put me through the mill when I was growing up in Detroit. So it was kind of difficult, but I knew I was right, and I wanted to be around the music, and I personally didn't care. That's who I always felt that I could identify more with Afro-American people and the jazz music than I could with white people.
And you were married to...
I was married
Duke
to Duke Jordan.
Jordan,
yeah, who was Charlie Parker's piano player.
So you got to hang with the crowd there.
Oh, yes. I was very fortunate, and Bird and I became quite good friends. He was like a big brother to me. He was wonderful to me, and without Charlie Parker, I don't know where I'd be today. You know, I probably wouldn't even be here.
Hmm.
Because this music has saved my life.
And so that, in a lot of ways, has become your quest.
Yes, ma'am.
You were able to do some things fairly well, I guess, sort of in the earlier days with studying with Lenny Tristano and.
Yeah, I studied with Lenny Tristano Charlie Mingus and Max Roach were good friends with Lenny, and Lenny had a studio where he had sessions on the weekends, Friday and Saturday nights, and I took a lesson with Lenny, and then, but I didn't know before I studied with Lenny, I was looking for a teacher, and it was Mingus and Max Roach who recommended Lenny Tristano to me. And they used to come up to the studios once in a while.
That must have been something.
Yeah, I mean to Lenny's studio. They'd come up there once in a while.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, a lot of people dropped in at that those sessions.
And later you were able to join the trio or with Steve Kuhn?
Yes, I met Steve. I don't remember what year I met Steve, but I had met George Russell came into this club in the village where I was working, and he had the piano player happened to be a student of George Russell's, and George came down to hear his student, and then he heard me, and he wanted to know where I came from to sing the way I did, and I said, well, originally from the coal mining area in Pennsylvania, and he said, I'd like to go back there. So we went back there, and my grandmother was still alive, and we went up to the beer garden, and there was an old miner sitting at the bar, and my grandmother was bragging about us being from New York, and the old miner said, yeah, well, do you still sing You Are My Sunshine? And I said, no, I don't sing that. And he said, why not? And then George Russell said, yeah, why not? And so George sat down at this old out-of-tune upright piano and started playing it, and I started singing it, and then my grandmother pushed him off the bench, and she said, that's not the way it goes.
Mm-hmm.
And then she started to play it for me, and then I sang with her, and then about, you know, sometime later after we got back to New York, George called me down to his apartment because he was still living in New York City down in the village, and he played this wonderful introduction. It was just beautiful, and then he stopped. He stopped playing. He said, okay, sing. I said, sing what? He said, sing You Are My Sunshine. I said, alone? He said, yeah, that doesn't bother you when you were a little kid. I said, yeah, but that was different. So that's how Sunshine was born.
Wow.
And it was on Riverside. It was recorded on Riverside.
Uh-huh.
And then George Russell also paid for a demo for me, and he took it around to, I think it was Prestige and Blue Note, and Blue Note picked it up, but Prestige was going to pick it up too, but Blue Note already had picked it up. So that's how I did Portrait of Sheila. So George Russell was very, very prominent in me ever recording.
Wow.
I thought I should get that in there so you'd get
That is important.
Yeah, I thought so.
Yeah.
You can still get, actually, now they have You Are My Sunshine on, I think you can just download it or whatever they call that, and you just can buy that one piece of music.
Hmm.
It was pretty ahead of its time when it came out.
Do you have any stories about the days when you were working with Steve Kuhn and Gary McFarlane?
Oh, yeah. Well, getting back to Steve Kuhn, I never worked with Gary McFarlane.
Oh, okay.
No, I never, that was
mistaken
Steve.
About that.
Steve worked with Gary McFarlane. I worked with Steve because after the Blue Note record came out, you know, I started doing a few little gigs around on the weekends, and I think I had asked Steve a couple of times. I met him, and I liked his playing, and I think he played a couple of gigs with me, and then we sort of lost touch, and then we got in touch with each other again, and we were, you know, just sort of friends, and then he decided he was going to have a singer, or one of his agent, a guy that was booking him said, well, you should get a singer to sing with your group, Steve, and he said, well, I'd like to get Sheila, and so that's how I got with Steve. Originally, there was also a saxophone player, and then eventually the saxophone player, after a couple of concerts, it was just me then, not the saxophone player anymore. So it was me and Steve, and we recorded a couple of they were albums at the time. Now they're on CD.
Right.
But that one has just been reissued, Playground, which is a recording of all Steve's compositions, me singing all of Steve's compositions with Harvey S. and Bob Moses.
Hmm. One to look for.
Yeah, we called it Steve Kuhn, Sheila Jordan Band.
Great.
We toured for a while, you know.
Must have been something getting to work with Steve Kuhn. He's quite an intriguing partner.
He's a great, great pianist,
mm-hmm.
but he's sort of like never got his just dues. I mean, you know, I think about him all. I mean, there's a lot of wonderful musicians out there, don't get me wrong. I'm not putting anybody down, but, you know, Steve has been around for years. I mean, he was John Coltrane's first piano player when Train went out on his own. He didn't last very long because, you know, Jimmy and Alvin, they wanted McCoy Tyner, and, you know. And so Coltrane, you know, gave in to that. But Coltrane hired June with the group.
Just want to mention to anyone who's just tuned in, you are listening to WSHA 88.9 FM in Raleigh, and we're speaking with Sheila Jordan, who's called us from New York, to talk about her latest CD and her music. Sheila, you pretty much seem to have started the bass voice thing.
Recorded, I did start it.
Recorded, for sure, recorded first with Harold Anderson in 1977, and then you've worked with Harvey Swores, Cameron Brown. How did that come about? How did that pairing come about?
Well, the thing was, actually, I started singing bass and voice with Steve Swallow when I was working at that little club in the Village where George Russell discovered me, or whatever you want to call it.
Uh-huh.
And Steve used to come down there and play the Monday night jam session night. And so that's where I met Swallow. You know, he was playing acoustic bass at the time. So I wanted to do the first, when I recorded for Blue Note, I wanted that to be a bass and voice recording, but they said, I don't think we're ready for that. But I still pursued it, you know, and I did a few concerts with Swallow. And but even before that, the first time I ever sang out in public doing bass and voice was with Charles Mingus in Toledo. Because I would do that up at Lenny's. I would try that out up at Lenny's because I loved the sound of the bass, and I just loved the freedom and the space and work. You know, I called it, you know, me, the bass, and silence, you know. But I used to try it up at Lenny's, but I remember I was going to visit relatives in Toledo, and we went to this jazz club, and Mingus just happened to be there. And of course I knew Mingus because I was living in New York at the time. You know, by this time I was in New York, and I'd met Mingus, and, you know, he'd come up to Lenny's and all that kind of stuff, you know. And so he called me up to sing. It was he didn't have piano. It was Mingus, a drummer, and Lee Konitz.
Hmm.
And so he said, why don't you come up and sing a tune? I said, yeah, but you don't have any piano. He said, so? That never bothered you, you know, when you're at Lenny's. I said, yeah, but I'm not ready to do that out in public. And he said, come on. And so I got up, and I sang Yesterday's with Mingus.
Wow.
Yeah. So that was actually the first time I ever performed it. But then, you know, then I started working at the Page Three, and by this time my daughter was born, and then I would try the bass and voice, and I knew that it could be done, and it's a wonderful way to do music with voice and bass. Actually, I was just rehearsing with Cameron today. I rehearse with bass and voice all the time because I'm always looking for new ideas, new repertoire. You know, I just really love it. It's my favorite way to sing, I must say.
Hmm. Well, as a matter of fact, I happen to have queued up a piece with you and Cameron Brown from the CD. I've grown accustomed to your bass.
Oh. And, do you have the other one, Celebration, too?
What, the CD?
Yeah.
I don't have it in front of me.
No, but I mean, did you get that? I just
yes.
wanted to make sure you got
yes.
it.
Oh, yes.
Good. Okay.
Actually, I do have it here. I do have it.
Yeah, I
brought a pile.
I just wanted to make sure you have, you know,
sure
you
do.
Have all of them.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
But I have this piece queued up I thought we would play for people so they can hear just
okay.
what we're talking about. And then we'll come back and talk about your 80th birthday celebrations and things.
Okay, my dear.
So,
thanks, Susan.
So here is Sheila Jordan and Cameron Brown with I've Grown Accustomed to the Bass.
We have one little tune then. We have one little tune that sums up how I feel.
I have grown accustomed to the bass. It almost makes my day begin.
Thank you. you and good night.
Ah, excellent. Excellent.
Oh, I changed the lyrics, you know.
Of course. That's what makes that particular track so fun. You have such a great time in live performance. It's something that one really has to be there and feel the presentation and see how you really are improvising mm-hmm. everything going on. That's what's so wonderful about it.
Oh, thank you, Susan. That's so sweet of you to tell me that.
Oh, absolutely. So we got to hear some classic Sheila Jordan with Cameron Brown on the bass and their version of I've Grown Accustomed to the Bass. Obviously, the audience was getting to enjoy that customization as well. So, Sheila, you've just celebrated in 2008 your 80th birthday and that wonderfully special celebration at Dizzy's Coca-Cola up in New York. Tell mm-hmm. us about that.
Well, that was wonderful. Todd Barkin, who, manages that room, had a wonderful singer, Tessa Suter, had seen Todd and said, you need to have Sheila here on her 80th birthday. And he said, oh, yeah, because I worked for Todd when he still had a club in San Francisco. And so I'd done another gig for him the year before. But he called me, he said, what do you want to do? And I said, well, what I'd really like to do is a string quartet, even if I have to pay for it, you know. He said, your wish is my command, you know. So I said, okay, Todd. So I got in touch with this wonderful cello player and arranger from Vancouver who I worked with up that way doing string quartet with. He's got a quartet of all women called the Baba Yaga String Quartet. But they couldn't come down, so we got players here in New York. But Harold came down, and he brought his arrangements down, and then I had the Alan Broadbent arrangements because I had done a recording for, it was on Muse at the time, Joe Fields Muse, of the string quartet called Hard Strings. So between Harold's tunes, arrangements of tunes that I do, and Alan Broadbent's arrangements of tunes that I recorded, I had three evenings of Steve Kuhn Trio with Billy Drummond on the drums, David Fink on the bass, and the string quartet. I called them the Bird Quartet. So it was wonderful. It was like a dream come true. I said, oh my God, I can't believe this is really happening. And it was fantastic. And it was a great way for me to celebrate my 80 years because I got turned on to a string quartet years ago when I heard Charlie Parker with strings.
Mm-hmm.
And when I first saw it, I said, oh, I'm not going to be, what are they doing to Bird? And then I heard Bird play, and it was so unbelievable. I said, oh, my God, one day I'd love to do that. And, you know, and just like the bass and voice at the time was, like, not thought of, I thought, oh, well. Except for Bird, I mean, how many people do like small string groups, you know? And it won't happen, or people will think I'm nuts again. And then Stan Getz came out with Focus, you know?
Hmm.
And I said, oh my God, I wasn't crazy after all, you know? Yes, it can be done. And so I had worked on that for quite a few years, and It happened. It was wonderful that it happened.
That's so exciting. You also received the Mary Lou Williams Women in Jazz Lifetime of Service Award in 2008.
Yes, I did that. And the year before, I received the Lil Hardin Armstrong Award.
Fabulous.
And then the Mac Award from, you know you're getting old when you start getting all these awards, Susan. You know what I mean?
But very well deserved, obviously.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, and I got the Humanitarian Award from the IAJE when it was still up and running. So I've got some nice awards that I'm very proud of. Of course, I stuck them in the closet, but my daughter says, Mom, you earned these. Put them on the wall. I said, oh, I feel embarrassed doing that.
Oh. Well, certainly you are quite the the messenger for the music, and that is part of what's certainly being acknowledged.
Yeah, I just, that's what I want to be, Susan. I want to be a messenger of the music. I've never had any desire to be a big star or to be, a diva. I never wanted to be anything like that. I just want to be a messenger of the music, whether I teach it, sing it, or go out and listen to it. I just want to keep this wonderful music alive. Because I got it from Bird, I got it from all the wonderful, wonderful bebop musicians, and I was so totally enhanced with how they played. And, of course, Billie Holiday, as far as singers, to me was the ultimate in emotion, you know. And I just want to keep the music alive. I don't want to see it go by the wayside.
Well, you certainly
That's my
are,
journey.
You certainly have taken the torch and are running with it, and you'll be running next with it to Toronto, and then back to Germany, and then England.
Yes, and Edinburgh. I have one festival in Gateshead, the Gateshead Festival in England, and then several gigs in England. But before that, I'll be in Edinburgh right after I finish Germany.
So,
and then in April, I'll be in Japan.
So clearly, at age 80, you're just totally energized by this and squeezing in as much as you can. I don't know how you do it.
Well, you know what? I don't think about it. I think if I thought about it, I'd probably, like, you know, have to go to a rest home. You know what I mean?
Well, it's very, very energizing to have all that music and all the love that comes with it, I'm sure.
Oh, it is, Susan. It's wonderful, and it's great to meet people like you and what you're doing for the music, having your radio station, I mean, working for the radio station and presenting the jazz music. I mean, that's so important.
Well, we sure enjoy getting to share all that music and getting to share it with you today. As a matter of fact, I've queued up here a song from your CD called Little Song. It's a high note release, Sheila Jordan, that features Steve Kuhn on the piano, along with David Fink on the bass, Billy Drummond on the drums, and also Tom Harrell on some of the tracks, including the one I had queued up. I know it's one of your favorite, called The Touch of Your Lips.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
So, and I love Tom Harrell. He's my favorite living trumpet player.
So I thought we would go out with that.
Thank you.
But I want to tell you again just how thrilled I am to be able to share this conversation with everyone out there in the audience and hear from you and about what you're doing right now to, as I said, take that torch of jazz around the world.
Oh, thank you so much, Susan. Thank you for having me. I can't thank you enough, really.
Oh, our pleasure. Well, you stay healthy and enjoy, and we're looking forward to hear from you maybe when you get back.
Okay. That'll be wonderful. Be in touch.
Okie doke.
Bless you, my dear. Bless you.
Bless you too, Sheila.
Okay.
Here's Sheila Jordan doing The Touch of Your Lips here at WSHA 88.9 FM.
Troubles get me and cares beset me and will not let me go. I turn to